Hello and welcome. My name is Gino Barbaro, one of the co-founders of Jake and Gino, and today's show is going to be an exciting show for me. I haven't seen this guest in the past few years. Catching up with him, it's going to be a lot of fun, people. Today, we are chatting with Marco Santarelli, two-time Inc. 1000 entrepreneur, investor, podcast host, and Broadway producer, just to name a few. Boy, he's been busy the last few years. He purchased his first real estate investment at the age of 18 and is now the founder and CEO of Narada Capital Management and Narada Real Estate Investments, where he is helping others build wealth through the power of real estate. Welcome to the show, Mr. Marco. How are we doing?
Hey, Gino. It's good to be back on your show, buddy. I've been great. How are you?
I'm doing great. And listen, I didn't even know back in 2003, you were one of the very first turnkey operators out there. How did you even come up with the idea?
Yeah, it's a good question and an interesting story. Technically speaking, there was one other company that could have claimed to be a nationwide provider of turnkey, but they only focused on Southern California and they never really reached out to other people. But then, the author, famous author, Robert G. Allen, he's...
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he's written like 20 books.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he, one of his famous books is Nothing Down Real Estate. So he was putting on an event where I live here in Orange County, California, a free event. And there was like probably 2,000 people at this free 3-day weekend event. And I had time on my side. I decided to go into real estate investing full time. And I thought, this is great timing. So I went to this particular event. Then I started going to boot camps. And as I was going to these boot camps, I started buying a lot of property in a very short period of time. In fact, I acquired 84 doors in 9 months, which was very aggressive and nobody else was doing that. So the other students caught wind of that and they were coming to me saying, hey, Marco, could you coach me? Can you mentor me? Can you help me? And my polite answer was, no, I'm sorry. I don't have the time, but I'm looking at a lot of property. I'm underwriting deals. So why don't I essentially pass those along to you? And then ultimately that became an assignment of contract. I had to sign, like put them under contract and then sell the contract to them. And so I was making money. And then I thought, well, geez, well, why don't I just turn the business into a brokerage, focus on underwriting, you know, turnkey real estate investment opportunities that fit my criteria, certain products, certain neighborhoods, certain markets. And that's how the business became to be. So it was really a light bulb moment. It was like, aha, people are spending time and lots of money to educate themselves, but they're not pulling the trigger to invest in real estate. Why not be the service provider that helps them go through that process of identifying the market, the neighborhood, the property management, and providing you all the resources and tools that you need to successfully invest while you're doing your education. So I didn't want to be an education company. I just wanted to say, hey, here, let me be the last chain, link in that chain, and provide you with the properties that you need so you can finally put the rubber on the road and make it happen.
So when you went to Robert Allen, wrote in books like Nothing Down for the 90s, I love his stuff. His stuff is so creative. People say you can't do that. Well, if you can't do that, you got to try to do that. How did you get into real estate? Why real estate for you?
Well, long story short, it actually happened at the age of 18. So call me a nerd or a geek or whatever you want to call me. I think I was entrepreneurial at 13 and I recognized at the age of about 9 that I wanted to be free, which meant time freedom. But time freedom, you can't have it unless you have financial freedom because you need to be financially independent or financially free to be, you know, to have that time freedom. Recognizing that early, I basically bugged my parents. I couldn't drive. I bugged my parents to buy me books and take me to stores where I can get my hands on Hume Publishing's, you know, real estate investor course and all this stuff. So I was consuming this content at an early age, like 15, 16. And then when I turned 18, when I could like legally qualify for mortgage financing, I bought my first townhome unit. Needed some work, but I bought it, fixed it up, put a sign in the yard, put an ad in the newspaper. There was no internet back then, by the way. So, you know, you couldn't advertise online. Mm-hmm. But ultimately I bought it, fixed it, leased it, managed it and held it. And the writing was on the wall as a late teen. And that was my course into real estate and the writing was on the wall. So I never looked back.
What did your parents say? Did they think you were crazy? Did your friends think you were crazy? What was that conversation like?
I don't think they were crazy. I don't know what they thought. They probably thought like, good for you. I don't know.
I'm just trying to think back and I always have sort of the same mindset as you did. My parents were both immigrants. My parents, Italian immigrants, same kind of thing. They had the power of real estate. They actually owned a couple of properties and I bought my first property early on as well. And when you taste that power of real estate, it can be really intoxicating, and you see the power of it. And an 18-year-old, so all of you out there listening saying, I'm too young, I don't have enough money, well, that objection is off the table right away. Because if an 18-year-old can do it with no internet, very little money, anybody can do it out there. So you start in 2003, Marco, and you start growing. Did you envision it to continue to grow and continue to scale like you've had for the last 20 years or so?
I didn't at the time, but let me add two interesting points to your last comment for your audience. Number one, my family wasn't wealthy. They were Italian immigrants. They both moved to Canada. That's where I was born, in Canada. They both moved to Canada, not speaking English, no money, starting like from scratch. We had a very small house. Our grandparents lived with us. My brother and I slept on the floor of the living room. We didn't have our own bedroom. So we didn't, you know, grow up with a silver spoon in our mouth. On top of that, you know, English was a tough language to learn because I grew up in a household that spoke Italian. I actually failed first grade because I couldn't speak enough English to get passed into the second grade. So I had my fair share of, you know, challenges, if you will. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you have the interest and the desire, you can do it. There's no excuse. There's no reason why you can't make it happen.
And Marco, it's one of those things where you're sleeping on the floor. That's your why. Your why is, I want to prove to people that I can do it, and I want to make a better life for myself. That's why my parents came to that country, because they wanted to make a better life for me and for my family. And I want to succeed in this. And that's what's driving you. And that's a commendable story, going out there and failing the first grade. So you can't even say you failed out of college. You failed the first grade. So
I almost did that too, man.
I love that, my friend. And, you know, let me ask another question, which I think is more relevant. You've been in the space. You go through 2008. And one of the reasons why I think, if you're looking at the turnkey, you want to be with somebody who's been through market cycles. You've been through market cycles. How did you survive the 2008 disaster for a lot of people in single family homes?
Well, I made my fair share of mistakes as well, which is something that we, you know, educated in part on the people that work with us that want that handholding and guidance, or maybe they're already successful, seasoned investors and they want to scale their portfolio. You know, we're still going to help them prevent them stepping on landmines. Mm-hmm. But 2008, I mean, prior to 2008, it was a party. Credit was available, widely available, and cheap. And that fueled the real estate market to become the bubble it became. But then after that, you know, we all know what happened. You know, the punch bowl was taken away, credit dried up, and it was nearly impossible to buy anything or even refinance. So if you were a speculator prior to that, and this is the danger that some real estate investors make, it's one of my 10 rules of successful real estate investing. They don't become investors, they become speculators. They're gambling, essentially, is what they're doing. They're saying, hey, real estate always goes up, which long term it typically does because it adjusts for inflation and there's other factors in there as well. But the thing is if you are speculating on the market, you are going to go through ups and downs. Now, if that property you buy doesn't have positive cash flow, net, 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 meaning that you can cover all your expenses, the contingencies for maintenance and repairs, the contingencies for vacancy, and service your debt, you'll never survive a downturn. Because when you are in a position where you have negative cash flow and you can't feed the beast long enough to carry that property, you're going to lose that property to foreclosure. You're going to be forced to sell it as a distressed seller and sell it at a loss. So you're going to take a loss one way or another. And that's what a lot of people did prior to 2008. They speculated on the market thinking that it'll continue to go up and they're going to make a lot of money. And sure, I know people who made millions of dollars just flipping homes because property values were appreciating so much. But that's a dangerous thing. I refer to cash flow as one thing. I refer to cash flow as glue. It's the glue that holds your real estate deal together. And when you have that, over time, your equity grows and you become wealthy from the equity gains. And then in time, your cash flows increase as well. And those cash flows add to your passive income, which allows you to have that financial independence in addition to the wealth that it creates, in addition to the tax benefits that real estate gives you. And now you have this powerful, powerful formula to create wealth and passive income and the financial freedom. So when you're a speculator, there's a danger that you won't achieve that because you're going to lose opportunities or lose the properties. And that's what people did before 2008. So to survive, to answer your question, to survive through 2008, you need to have made sure that the investments you made were cash flow positive and could weather through good times and bad, recessions or not, because if you have the glue that holds your deal together, you'll survive through those bad times and you'll come out on the other end stronger.
Mm-hmm. There are two slogans that we like to say, Jake and myself: buy right and sit tight. That's exactly what you're talking about. And if it doesn't cash flow, you let the grass grow. You need to have cash flow. Cash flow won't make you wealthy. It'll get you out of your job. Equity will make you wealthy. And that's what you're talking about. You want to cash flow stabilize, have enough cash flow coming in, but then you want to crystallize that equity going forward. So, I mean, big kudos to you. I love what you're saying about that. What are the differences and maybe similarities between 2008 and what we're going through right now? You may see what pricing credit markets. What are you seeing that is similar to 2008? And I want you to really harp on why is now the right time to get into real estate? Because everyone's saying, oh, the sky's falling. I need to run for the exits. Why do they got to pick up the phone and start working with Marco right now in this part of the market cycle?
I don't know. I think there's more that is not the same between now and 2008.
I agree.
Yeah, than there is that is the same. In fact, it's kind of hard to really put your finger on something that is truly the same between 2008 and now. You know, what we have right now is an environment where we have strong demand, a lack of supply, mm-hmm. And that imbalance has been going on for years, and it's not really getting any better anytime soon. We have higher interest rates and tighter credit right now than we did in 2008. But in 2008, there was a lot of inventory because there was this pseudo housing boom. There was a lot of people who wanted real estate, but there was also a lot of speculators and builders were building like crazy, and credit was driving and fueling everything. It was fueling the demand side, and it was fueling the builders' wants and needs to build product. But there wasn't enough demand to ultimately fulfill, you know, the amount of inventory. We peaked with inventory around 2006, 2007. It was a very high amount of inventory. Today, we have lack of supply. We have a historically low amount of inventory in the resale market. We have about 1.1 million units. We need to have about 2.3 million units on average, long-term historical average, to have a normalized equilibrium in the housing market. We don't have that. We haven't had that for a while. So we just don't have enough supply, and that's good. That problem is going to drag out to 2030 and beyond. Now, builders are scrambling to create enough inventory to catch up with the housing demand that we have, but that's a slow process. Builders cannot just drop everything and build, you know, an infinite amount of product. So, you know, we're just in a different time. The other thing too is borrowers back then, you know, were not entirely qualified. You know, there was all kinds of jokes, like you could fog a mirror and get a loan. You had these ninja loans, no income, no asset, no job. And quite literally, you could just sign and get a signature loan, a mortgage loan, with very little underwriting qualification criteria. Today, the average credit score is 720 and above. So everybody's qualifying for a mortgage is well qualified. Is there going to be a foreclosure crisis? No, absolutely not, because people are sitting on a lot of equity. They have options. They don't have to, they're not forced to sell. They can refinance or they can find other alternative options. And the mortgage loans that are out there are also, you know, very well qualified. We're not going into a situation where there's going to be a lot of foreclosures because people can't afford their mortgage loans. People have locked into great rates on 30-year fixed rate mortgages. In fact, I was just talking to an investor yesterday who has a 2.9% mortgage and lots of equity, and he's looking to invest. And so I was giving him some ideas on how he can pull some of that equity out, you know, and build a portfolio using that equity so he could leverage that what I call dormant equity, mm-hmm. and build a portfolio without having to give up the 2.9% financing. So We're in a strong position. The economy's doing well. You know, there's a lot of jobs out there. Now, granted, the Fed is trying to suppress that. They're really trying to pump the brakes on the labor market, and they're trying to create what we'll call a labor recession. But they want to do that by design because they want to try to control the economy, and suppress demand. And you know, they are doing a good job of it, but that's just in their effort to control inflation. So we're in a different time right now. It's not the same as 2008.
So let me ask you, in 2008, the similarities that I see, maybe some bank failures, but those banks were just run poorly. I mean, when you raise interest rates that high, they just had bad investments. It's a different kind of thing. And one thing that struck me when you're talking is that supply. If they don't get the supply right, and in a lot of states, California doesn't want to build. So what's going to happen in these blue states, New York, they don't want building out there. It's not going to correct itself. And someone who's holding these assets, they're only going to get the as they say, the tide rising. They're the ones who are going to get out there and monopolize on that. What markets are you focusing on? What do you like to look at as far as a market?
For investment purposes?
Yeah, for investment purposes, yes.
Well, I can answer that question in so many different ways. I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to answer it. So generally speaking, we want markets that have two main things. And this, I've been saying this for literally 20 years now. Mm-hmm. The two core things that we look for in a particular market are jobs, mm-hmm. job availability, and job growth, ideally. If you have job stability and jobs, you have a stable market. You're going to have people who work there and stay there and have income to afford their rent or afford their mortgages. So that's an important factor when you're talking about, you know, the macroeconomic picture. Number mm-hmm. two, we want markets ideally that have population growth. Mm-hmm. The number one factor for population growth is typically a strong job market, because people will move in because they want employment and they want higher wages or higher income. So they move to markets where they can find employment. Those two things typically drive the real estate market. They keep it consistent. They provide that pressure, that upward pressure underneath to keep prices in line and maintain the growth and bring builders in. So builders, you know, provide the inventory to keep, you know, pace with the demand. But you know, when you have strong population growth and you have strong job markets, that's when you see unusually high or abnormal appreciation rates, because now you have the supply and demand dynamics shifting in that market, and that's starting to push rates up and prices up. But those are the two key things: is job growth and population growth in a market. Now, there's another factor outside of that we also look at, and that is a market that has, relatively speaking, affordability. Because if you want to look at San Francisco as an example, or where I live here in Orange County, California, you're not going to find affordable housing. And when I say affordable, I don't necessarily mean housing that's affordable to live. If you want to live here, I'm talking about, but that's true. But I'm also talking about numbers that need to make sense, meaning that you can buy a property at a dollar amount or a price where the rents can cover your expenses, your contingencies, and your debt service, and still have positive cash flow. Because if you can't do that, then it doesn't really make sense from a financial perspective. Now, could you do that in a very expensive market like San Francisco? Yeah, but that means you're putting 50% down. But do you want to do that? That's not an intelligent thing to do as a real estate investor, because you're not leveraging your investment capital as well as you can, or as much as you can. You're better off looking at other less expensive markets where you can get higher cap rates on your investment, and therefore higher cash on cash returns when you leverage your investment dollar. So that's the smarter thing to do. So I wouldn't look at a market like San Francisco, for example, or many of the coastal markets, New York, New Jersey, the coast of Oregon, the coast of California, even the Northwest, like the Seattle, Tacoma area. I mean, these markets are very expensive. Now they're experiencing good growth, but from an investor's perspective, they don't make sense. So that begs the question, you know, where do I like to look? Where do we look as a company? You know, we're Norada Real Estate Investments is focused on about 25 markets right now. And for the most part, they are located on the eastern half of the U.S. So that would be flyover country, basically the Midwest, pockets of the Northeast, certainly Florida, where, you know, areas where you're living, and then, you know, parts of the South and Southeast. So that includes parts of Texas, like Houston, Memphis, Tennessee. We've been in Oklahoma City on and off, Atlanta, Georgia on and off. The Carolinas, North and South Carolina. So it just depends. Baltimore, the Baltimore metro area has been good, but certainly Indianapolis and Kansas City have been great. So those are the markets we focus on. Why? Because the rent to price ratios there are very attractive, meaning that you can purchase a home in the $100,000 to $200,000 range that rents for about 0.8% of that per month. What does that mean? A $100,000 home is renting for $800 or $900, maybe $1,000 a month. A $200,000 home will typically rent for $1,600, $1,700, $1,800 a month. With those kind of numbers, you can cover your expenses, your contingencies, and your debt service, have a positive cash flow, and be in an area where it's experiencing either moderate or average growth, price growth, and rent growth, or above historical average price growth. So that's a long answer to your question.
It's a detailed answer, and it's an answer that I like because you're giving jobs, job growth, population growth, and affordability. And it's the same thing in multifamily. And I think it's the same thing in any other real estate niche. If you don't have jobs coming in, there's no demand for your apartments, or there's no demand for housing. So housing prices aren't going to go up. And if it's not affordable, if it's cheaper to buy a home than to rent a home, then guess what? It's another factor. Marco, one of the things I think that investors make mistakes on when they're looking to invest in anything, they never set their goals. They never say, why am I investing in this vehicle? Whether it's self-storage, mobile home parks, multifamily. Who is the perfect or ideal avatar for somebody looking to invest in rent-to-own properties?
I think sometimes people make a choice based on their either their comfort level or their level of knowledge. If you grew up in a trailer, you know, or a mobile home, you'll probably, you know, be drawn to that. If you've always had storage units, you know, throughout your life because you live in an apartment, you need three storage units to store all your crap, you know, you'll probably have an understanding for that type of product, right? Yes. So you might be drawn to that because you have a familiarity with it or a comfort level with it. But at the end of the day, there's one truism, and you know this as well as I. We all need a roof over our head, right? We all need a place to live. So you can't, in my opinion, go wrong with prudent, well-chosen residential income property. So whether it's multi-unit, you know, a 1,000-unit apartment complex or a single-family home, if you have a good property that's safe, clean, and functional in a good, desirable neighborhood. And to me, that's key. You want to be in a good, desirable neighborhood. And we can, you know, obviously quantify that. You will do well. Real estate over the long term has always done well. But if you buy right, if you go into it right, you know, in a good market, in a great neighborhood where the numbers make sense, you will do well over time. Real estate is very forgiving as an asset class. It's a slow moving asset class. And if you have the factors in play where you have the tailwind and no headwind or very little headwind, you will make out very well as the years go by. It's just real estate just has always done that because people need a place to live and they want to live in desirable neighborhoods, desirable areas. And if you check those boxes from the beginning, you have mitigated a lot of your risk. So what you choose is up to you. But for me, it has always been residential real estate of some kind, whether it's a small apartment complex or a single family home or duplex.
I love that answer because you just answered why I got into multifamily. I never really understood why. My parents always had duplexes, quads. I had a restaurant with three apartments upstairs. And I just naturally gravitated towards that. That's such an epiphany for me. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. I never knew. Now that you say that, it makes total sense to me. I never went and bought a single family home. We always dealt with the tenants and the residents. So, wow, thank you for that. And before we go to the break, I want to reiterate what you just said. It's a basic human need. Food, clothing, and apartments, in our case, or rental housing. That is so important. You can't buy it on the internet. It's something that you need, and there's something that hasn't evolved, and it's something that's just a basic human need. That's such an important point. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
And we're back, my friend. Best habit for success, because you've grown like a madman and you're juggling hundreds of balls now, but it didn't start out that way. What do you lend your success to?
When you ask anybody that question, they could probably come up with more than one answer. And that's true for me. And I can't say that it was just one factor, but the one thing I do like to say often is, taking action. And the reason I say that is because it's not difficult to order books on Amazon. It's not difficult to read, content and articles on the internet. It's not difficult to listen to the Jake and Gino show, you know, or the passive real estate investing show that I do, or anything for that matter. The content is there. You can consume lots of content, and most of it's free or almost free. So we can become the most educated people in real estate or investing or finance. But at the end of the day, if you don't actually take action, like make it happen, you will never succeed. You can be the most educated failure, if you will, out there. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's always been, you know, taking actions. I mean, some people might do this. They might say, ready, fire, and aim. You know, they'll just do it. And you know, there's probably an argument to say that, you know, you're better off having taken action and failed and not taking action and having gone nowhere, because at least you've learned something from your failure. Right. Mm-hmm. But you know, to take that one step further, Gino, I also like to half jokingly say there's really three kinds of people out there. You've got, you know, those that, make things happen, right? The action takers, like you and, you know, Jake and other people. There's those that make things happen. There are those that watch things happen. So they know they should do it. They watch it. They educate themselves, but they don't actually take action. And then the third type of person are those that wonder what happened, you know, and, you know, those are the people who are just completely oblivious. You know, they live in ignorance. Mm-hmm. You certainly don't want to be in that third category. But it's painful to be in the second category, knowing what you need to do, knowing what you should do, but not actually doing it. And then you just look back potentially years later in regret, saying, damn it, I knew I should have invested in real estate 20 years ago when I had the opportunity, and I never did.
Mm-hmm. I love that. If you don't mind, I'd love to share. I think when you say make it happen, somebody may be struggling and saying, well, it's hard. I don't know where to start. I was blessed to find Jake and have an amazing partner and have an accountability partner. I may not have done it on my own. I would have found my way, but I don't think I'd have this level of success. So if you're struggling out there, find a group like Narada. Try to find other people who are doing it, who have success. Success leaves clues. And if you're stuck out there, join a community, join a group, because once you put yourself out there, it's scary, but people are watching, and then you can't let those people down. I can't let Jake down right now. Believe it or not, he is in Orange County right now. He's on vacation right now, and I'm on the show. I'm not letting him down. We actually got a contract sent over yesterday. He's on vacation, got the contract going on. We had an interview this morning with the company. He was on that. He's on vacation. He's not letting me down. I'm not letting him down. And if you're having struggles making it happen, get on the call, get with the group, and find yourself accountable. Once you hold yourself accountable, it will be a lot easier to make it happen. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that was really the catalyst for me being stuck all those years and not sure how to take action.
Yeah, makes complete sense. I mean, like I said, you know, you can want it, you can educate yourself on it, you can do all the things you need to do prior to actually pulling the trigger. But if you don't pull the trigger, you're not going to get anywhere, because it just won't happen. Nobody's going to hand it to you on a silver platter.
Mm-hmm. And Marco, you've been pulling a lot of triggers lately. I mean, it seems like you've got a lot of stuff going on. How did you morph from what you're doing in Narada to starting a fund, to starting masterminds? How did that all work out?
Long answer to that question. It's kind of a progression thing, but you know what, what happens as an entrepreneur, like, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you'll understand this, and you're probably doing this, and maybe I don't even know it. But you know, you focus on building a business. For you know, for me, it's your syndication business. Or for you, it's your syndication business. For me, it was Norada Real Estate Investments, which I started a little over 20 years ago. And you know, it was a slow grind, you know, to build that as a solopreneur. But over time, you start to build it, you have some success, and then you get to the point where you can afford to hire somebody to help you out. Now you can focus on growing the business and this and that. But with entrepreneurs, there's a progression. You focus on a business, you turn it into a viable and successful business. And then hopefully you have profit from that business that you can now reinvest either into assets like real estate, or you reinvest those profits into the business to continue to grow and scale it. And then you get to a point, hopefully, where now you have excess profit that you can start to venture out and build another pillar of income, which is another business model. It could be, you know, your academy, or it could be, you know, whatever it is, could just, you know, another business. And that's ultimately what happened. This is what happens with entrepreneurs in general who have multiple businesses. They build a successful business, and now they've got the time and money or profit to launch another business, and they start building something else. And long story short, that's what happened with me, with several things simultaneously, not just one business venture, but several at the same time. So I started Norada Capital, which is it's essentially a private equity firm. But from the outside looking in, it's an investment fund, a debt fund. So investors are essentially investing, and they're making 12% per year or 15% per year fixed interest on promissory notes, and we pay them monthly. So for them, it's, you know, passive income. It's good for them, because especially if they're using a self-directed retirement account, you just set and forget it. It's just passive income. You don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. But what I've done with that PE firm is I've used that. I was already doing some of this before the PE firm, but I've used that private equity firm using OPM, other people's money, paying them healthily, you know, 12 and 15% every month, to leverage that, arbitrage that capital into other ventures. So that's how we, in part, started these other ventures, like the Power Room Mastermind, like the Aspire Tour, like the Money Is Mastermind. The Broadway musicals and productions that I'm investing in, there's now 8 or 9 of them. You know, one of them is called A Beautiful Noise. It's the Neil Diamond musical. So we did that in conjunction with Neil Diamond, which is doing very, very well. It's an incredible production. So if you're ever in New York or on Broadway, let me know. I will treat you, Gino.
Thank you.
And we have another one coming out here this month, actually. We have opening night later this month for Harmony, which is with Barry Manilow. And so we're doing all kinds of great things. The Devil Wears Prada is on the slate. And, you know, that's coming out soon. And I'm the third co-producer on that. So I'm doing all these fun things now. You know, it was a grind in the beginning. It's still a grind now, but now it's a fun grind, because now I can do other business ventures and launch other projects. But it all started with the one business. Started with real estate investing. Then from real estate investing, it became a real estate business as a real estate entrepreneur. And then from that, you know, you leverage your success and your reputation and your capital into the next venture, you know, like your real estate academy or whatever it may be. So, you know, you just start to stack and build, and you find that it starts to mushroom. But it gives you more choice too, because you could do the things you really want to do, you know, things that excite you.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Before we sign off, any books, any book recommendations, anything that you've read or anything that you do on a daily basis as far as getting information into you that's really helped you out?
I always start reading books and I never finish them. I'll read half of it, and then yes. It's like shiny object syndrome. I'll start reading another one and then another one. And all of a sudden I've got like 50 books that I've started yes. And not finished.
I feel the pain.
Oh man, I tell you. But you know, one thing I've been thinking about lately, this is basically an answer to your question, but in a very roundabout way. Mm-hmm. I've been kind of going back to thinking about rereading the classics, like Think and Grow Rich, How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Richest Man in Babylon. You know, all those cornerstone, you know, evergreen books In fact, my daughter, this is one book I really want her to read. I'm not pushing her hard, but I'm pushing her to read it. It's How to Win Friends and Influence People. I mean, talk about like an incredible book that is beneficial for anybody and everybody, that you should probably read at least once a year, every year, and just keep coming back to it. So that's, if I was to give a book recommendation, that would be it right now, is just go back to those all-time classics that you should keep coming back to time and time again. And, you know, just kind of reset, remind yourself what you know, learn the things you never caught the first time you read the book, and just build and enforce, you know, the things that you should be focused on.
That's an excellent answer. And if you haven't read the books, we're presupposing that all the listeners have, because they're all really high level. But if you haven't, those three books are the pillars. All of the gurus today are ripping off information from those timely classics. Where can the listeners get a hold of you, Marco?
Well, it's not just me. It's me and my team. I always have to give my team credit, because you surround yourself with, you know, like-minded people that help you succeed. You know, you help them and they ultimately help you. So it's not a one-man show. But my personal website, where I is a launching pad to everything else, is just my name, marcosantarelli.com. I'm easy to Google and find, but Santarelli, S-A-N-T-A-R-E-L-L-I, Santarelli. So that's my personal website. But the real estate website, if you want to go directly there, is just noradarealestate.com.
If you'd give me 1 minute to recap your incredible story, I'd love to do it for the listeners. Because for me, I met you several years ago. But if you can all picture Marco Santarelli coming to Canada with his family, not speaking English, sleeping on the floor, going to first grade, failing first grade, and then saying to his parents at the age of 9 and 10, I just want to buy books. I can't get in the car and drive. Mom, can you bring me in Italian to this bookstore? And mom is probably like, what's Marco doing? I don't understand. But then at the age of 18, he goes out and he puts his first townhome under contract, closes it. There's no internet back then. He gets his sign out front. He starts renting his sign out. And then in 2003, he starts Norada, one of the very first, if not the first, turnkey rental. I think, to me, being a true visionary, not seeing anyone else doing it, but really what the essence of an entrepreneur is. He sees a problem and there's an opportunity and he puts two and two together. And the thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars that he's invested in himself with education, going to all these different seminars, reading books, even if they're half read, you still got to buy the books, going to all the different mentors, continuing to grow, and, you know, over the past 20 years, going through market cycles and sticking true, growing an amazing team, and now doing what he wants to. And I think going towards his sole purpose, it's been a really incredible journey over the past 20 years. And it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, Marco.
Hey, Gino, that was spot on. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I admire what, you know, you and Jake and Gino are doing. In fact, if I may say, I know you know what I'm going to say, and you're going to probably laugh, but I remember when I first interviewed you guys many years ago, you guys were literally sitting on a sofa somewhere. I think there was a ping pong table in the room as well.
Yes.
Is that right? There was a ping pong table?
It was a foosball table, but I don't want to give myself away. So,
yeah, I mean, you guys were just, you know, cutting your teeth and getting started. And you didn't have, like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of assets under management back then. It was like, you two Italian guys from, you know, I want to say from New York. I'm not even sure where you guys came from.
We are from New York. That's spot on. So when you mentioned that to me, I'm like, I hope he doesn't bring that up in my show, maybe on your show. But, and that, Marco, that's a testament. That's the power to both of us starting out, not really knowing, but just figuring it out and taking the next step and taking the next step. And it's okay if you fail. Awkwardness is an indication of learning. That's what Chris Voss says. I felt awkward for the last 15 years of my life because I know it's a constant growing process. And when Marco's there doing his 8th Broadway show, he's going to be satisfied and say, what's the next venture? That's what an entrepreneur is all about. We're never satisfied. We want the next part. But what you need to do is you need to take the first step, go to Norada, start investing in real estate. Don't waste, so you can build your nest egg. So 3, 4, 5 years from now, you can start doing what you truly are made to do. Once again, thanks, Marco, my friend, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Gino.